We got four hot topics to cover today. This is our first panel show on the Stream Leader Report. We've got Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, and Rob Greenlee. Let's do a show.
It's the Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
All right, welcome to the Stream Leader Report. It is Thursday, and we are live today. I'm Ross Brand, host of the Stream Leader Report on 100 TV, and joining me are my fellow co-hosts on this live panel show on 100 TV, all our 100 TV hosts, Claudia Santiago, a musician, performer, and the host of Viva La Stage, Rob Greenlee, Hall of Fame podcaster, works with StreamYard, and he's the host of Trust Factor on 100 TV, and of course, the wonderful copywriter and business advisor, and the host of Business in the Raw, Rebecca Gunter. We're going to have four hot topics, four stories for you, and you're just going to get conversation among creators about things of interest to creators, things in the news, things that are happening in our industry that maybe aren't talked about or talked about very politely or quietly, but we're going to have those conversations for creators, and each one of us is going to host a segment. Claudia, if you're up and comfortable and ready to run, take it away. What do you got for us?
Okay, I'm first up. Okay, first of all, I'm going to start off with something. We're going to put a little rose in the hair. And we're going to do a little bit. You guys didn't know this, but I'm going to get each and every one of you to learn a little Spanish. So my glass here that I use on my show a lot is called Drinking from the Glass of Fabulous. All right? So I'm going to teach you how to say that in Spanish. Ready? Okay, Ross, tú eres fabuloso. Okay, so Rebecca and Rob, ready? One, two, three. Point to Ross. Tú eres fabuloso.
Fabuloso.
Okay, now we all point down to Rebecca.
Muchas gracias.
Now, when we speak of women, we say fabulosa. Okay, ready? Point down to Rebecca. Tú eres fabuloso. Yeah, look at she's saying.
Tú eres fabuloso.
Tú eres fabuloso.
Rob,
fabuloso.
Tú obelus fabuloso.
Fabuloso.
Oh my gosh. All right, I'm going to have to work with y'all. Okay,
Claudia?
Now, everyone, point to the audience. Okay. Ready? Point to the audience. Okay.
I'm still slaughtering.
Okay, so for many people, it's two S fabuloso.
Tú eres.
Two eres for many people.
Yes.
Two eres fabulosas.
Yeah. Or you can say, ustedes son fabulosos.
That would be the formal.
Fabulosos. So
okay, I'm out of ammo. I just know the formal in the end.
Give your hand, sell the hand, pat on the back.
It's a nice opener, Claudia.
All right. So the reason I did that, not only to show you a little bit of Spanish, is that you are indeed fabulous. And this is what is something that I think every entrepreneur needs to know. Sometimes we rely so much on technology, we rely so much on the stats. What we forget is what's within us. And that's where you've got to really take that hat on. I've had the privilege of being trained in entrepreneurial stuff, in business, in event production by some amazing, huge event stage stadium producers. Now, Ross, I know I have some pictures that I sent you, so we'll get maybe throw up that eagle if you want. Okay. When we're in a stadium, okay, and this is what I was taught, when you're down below, you can't see everything that's going on. So we've got to take not just a bird's eye view, but an eagle eyes view. Eagles soar, they spread their wings. They take authority. I don't know if you've ever seen an eagle fly and come down for the landing. Man, they pick out what they want and they go, boom, and they grab it and they take off. And if you show the stadium, you'll see what I mean. Can you imagine being way down there and you can't see everything from above? So as an entrepreneur and as an entertainer, and I have to say this, sometimes us entertainers get pigeonholed into this, oh, you're a singer, you're an entertainer. No, let me tell you this. An entertainer is really an entrepreneur. You have to be. This is the other thing is, I called it unconventional, and this is going to spark up a little bit of something here. And I'm going to get all of you guys to pipe in here what's unconventional about what you do. But let me share a little secret that I have that I don't really talk about much, but I'm going to talk about it on this show. Some of my mentors way back when I first started, they said to me, Claudia, the things that you're going to need to learn are not learned in a classroom. You can go sit in a classroom, and I've sat in music classrooms and stuff, but entrepreneurship, you got to do the thing. So I was really blessed to travel internationally with my mentors and learn on the road. Okay. And then I traveled with some speakers. I learned on the road. And then in that, entertainers are real creatives. And we tap into stuff that maybe some people don't. So I want to challenge you today. Since I was a little girl, okay, here goes my little secret. You ready? Everybody give me a drum roll. Ever since I was a little girl, okay, I went to the movies at night in my dreams. Full color. And in those dreams, I would get like these crazy downloads for ideas, creativity, even how to do things. It was just the wildest, craziest thing. And I used to buy into the fact that I ate too much pizza. Until I got around some mentors that were entrepreneurial, some mentors that were like, no, you don't ignore that, girl. You know what? If you're getting ideas during the day, your brain might be getting ideas in the evening. So I would write them down. And today people say to me, how do you come up with that? I had a dream about it. Simple as that. So I want to encourage you guys. That's one of my secret things that I'm sharing today. It is unconventional. Now, I don't go about creating everything that I see in dreams or whatever, but that is just one of the ways that I'm wired, my brain is wired, and possibly one of the gifts that I have that I couple along with some other gifts I have. And so then I create things, I implement, okay? I put into motion. I don't just sit on my bleep bleep dreaming about it. So that is another
thing. That's a Spanish word I know.
There we go. Okay. I was mentored too. And the reason I bring up mentors is because not only are we to do the thing, this is what I believe. Not only are we to do the thing, but how are we bringing up that other generation? How are we coming alongside? I love what Ross Brand does. Like I said earlier when we were off stage, how he like throws me an idea. Hey, Claudia, you want to be involved in this? And I just sit there and I go, gulp. Okay, let's do it. So yeah, I just want to say, where are you stuck? You know what? You've got things within you to help you get unstuck. Yes, we have technology. We have one another. We have community. And let me share with you one of my dreams. I was laying down fast asleep. There were all kinds of other entrepreneurs around me and creatives. I mean, fast asleep. But it was time to wake up. It was time to wake up. And some of them just said, I just want to keep sleeping. I was up late last night. And you know what? I got my sleep in gear and I got up. Okay. And when I got up, guess what? I couldn't find my old clothes. I found new shoes. I found a new skirt. I don't really wear skirts so much. And it's not my comfort zone. Let's just put it that way. I'd rather wear a pair of hot leather pants or something. Anyways, and I just went, you know what? You know what? I'm going to put on those new shoes. I'm going to put on that skirt. I'm going to put on the new. If you're stuck, I just encourage you, get out of the old place. Don't grumble and complain about it. Honor it for what was, but embrace the new and step into it. There's all kinds of things. Getting unstuck too, you might even want to get into better health. We turned one of our rooms, our guest rooms. We love our guests, but they can sleep on the couch. Just kidding. And we turned it into a gym. So I lift. I do things that keep me healthy so I can travel, so that I can do a full show. My shows are not like an hour sets. They're like three 1 hour sets or 4 1 hour sets. Like it's a friggin' marathon. So gotta be healthy. And then that bird's eye view thing, you guys. When an eagle soars, they see above everything. They take authority. In that dream that I had, that stadium thing was a dream, actually. But it was part of, that was very common ground for me, because when I was trained by mentors, I worked those with them. And so they trained me. Claudia, like in my dream, I'll share quickly that dream, was there was stuff going wrong in the production. There was stuff going wrong in the event. But I couldn't put my finger on it. I couldn't see because I was down below. I couldn't see. Then I got the bird's eye view, the eagle eye view, and I saw it. There was a group of people that were like not doing what they're supposed to do, okay? They were bleep, bleep, bleeping, okay? They're not doing what they're supposed to do. But the thing is, there's timing and wisdom. Could you imagine in a stadium like that, if all of a sudden as a producer or as a singer on stage, I would say, oh, everybody stop. There's some people over here not doing the right thing. There's timing and wisdom when you get that bird's eye view, when you can't take that authority and you go, okay, I'm going to deal with that later. Right now is not the time, the space. We're going to deal with it later. So sometimes with that bird's eye view, you may see things. And this is where we get to the cracked glasses, Ross. I don't know if you've got that there.
I don't.
You don't. Okay, so I sent Ross this picture of cracked glasses. What we see through, the lenses we see through, really matter. And if we're constantly looking for the dirt in people, we're constantly looking for the things that are going wrong and we're not picking out the gold, then we're missing it. So I just encourage you to ditch the cracked glasses and put on some really cool, healthy glasses. In other words, the stuff that hurt us in the past, not everybody's going to mess around with us. Not everybody's going to hurt us. So we need to deal with the matters of the heart. We need to deal and we need to put some things in order. I've had situations where I've had to fire musicians. I've had to fire producers. I've had to let them go. But it's been timing and wisdom and all that. So just some little tips. I think my time's up. I'm going to wrap it up here. But I do want to say to everybody, you are fabulous. What's within you is so damn fabulous that I can hardly contain it. You know what? Sometimes we don't trust ourselves and we look at our numbers, we look at our figures and we go, oh man, I really screwed up. No, sometimes you got to put on the new shoes. You got to embrace the new. Rob right now is challenging me, challenging us to put our video production into a podcast. And I'm going, how's that going to work for my thing? Because mine's so visual. But you know what, Rob? I'm telling you here out loud in public, I'm going to figure the thing out. I'm going to take your challenge. Okay, there you go, guys. You're fabulosos. Fabulosa.
All right, that's awesome, Claudia. We're going to talk more about podcasting in a little bit, but actually Rob has got a different subject he's going to tackle. So, Rob, I'm going to move you to the top frame and fire away. Start the discussion.
All right. One thing I don't want to do in this next topic, and it's talking about the world's perception of the coming trend in technology of artificial intelligence. And this is an interesting dovetail topic to what Claudia has been talking about, this around creativity and bringing together elements of human thought that can be inspiring and hopefully some innovation happens here. We can transform human experience into something positive. And that's, speaking of glasses putting on, AI to some degree right now is being seen a little bit with rose-colored glasses by many who want to take advantage of this growing trend of technology. And I saw this happen back in the early days of the internet and the web. I did a whole radio show called Web Talk Radio and built that into a large program as well. And it was very pro-technology. It was very positive. But at times, I did dive into areas of how technology has two ends of the spectrum. It's got, you know, and this really applies to human experience in general and human nature, which is there's always a little bad with everything that's good. And I think that's the message that I want to talk about AI today to some degree, is there's a lot of creativity that's being created with this technology, whether it be artwork or written text or taking a vast amount of human intelligence and human knowledge and coalescing it into a easier way of experiencing that information or that artwork or that creativity. And I think, but there is, like I said, two ways of looking at it, right? Is it putting us as humans in a situation where we're not using our own creativity as much? And is it also creating a situation where we're becoming more and more reliant on technology as a replacement for our own human abilities? And I think that's the tension. And I think Claudia is a good contrast to that, because what she talks about is bringing your inner creativity out and applying it to solving problems or creating experiences and things like that. And I believe that's the tension that we're seeing in the world around AI technology right now, is how much do we want to put our trust? And that gets back to my podcast and my show that I'm doing about trust. I believe that that's the issue of our times, and it's only going to become more important, is our ability to decide what to trust, what not to trust, and also how much trust we apply will impact our human experience, right? And what we experience in our lives will either be controlled by us or it will be controlled by others. And that is the risk of this technology. So the topic really that I wanted to talk about is, it gets back to that, but it's really more about the best sides of technology and the worst sides of technology as it applies to artificial intelligence. And we're all getting sucked into this world. And there are those individuals out there in our world that are perceiving this as the next gold rush of sorts, right? And they're jumping in with both feet, being advocates of this technology and applying it in very creative ways. And I applaud those folks for embracing change and embracing, just like what Claudia was talking about, and applying this technology to create innovation and new ideas. And but there's always this human nature aspect of pulling it back and saying, okay, this is great, but is there any downside to this? What is the yin and yang of the relationship that we have with our own technology in our own lives? And that's where I think, as you look to the future, there's a lot of speculation going on right now around how this is going to evolve and how this is going to impact our society and our interpersonal relationships. Are we going to be more polarized because of technology and artificial intelligence? Are there going to be artificial intelligent agents out there that are at either end of the political spectrum and they're going to battle with each other just like humans are? Is there going to be some element of this that will bring us together? And I think that those are the real questions that I think we're all needing to address. And I'm hoping that this tension doesn't create stress in people's lives. But my fear is that may be a result of this because of the rapid element of change. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I wanted to go around the panel and maybe get each of you's perception of how this rapid move towards AI technology has impacted your life and what you're seeing and how you're feeling about it as well. I don't know if Claudia, if you have any thoughts that you want to share.
Whoa, in the hot seat. Okay. And I'm going to be brutally honest with you.
Yeah.
I haven't embraced it at all.
Okay. That's usually okay.
I'm an early adopter, usually. Yeah. But with this one, and the reason I say that too is because I need y'all's help. If you have any insights, I would love it. Any viewers, if you have insights, get at me. I'm ready to embrace it. I'm ready to look into it more. The entertainment industry is scared, yeah, as with royalties and things like that. The
writers, right.
Yeah, they're very scared and don't know where it's going. They don't know how to deal with it. So yeah, I want to embrace that one. So thanks for asking me first.
That's what the show's all about, is putting us all on the hot seat to some degree and making us feel a little uncomfortable, but yet pushing us a little bit. And so, Ross, what's your thoughts on this?
What? It's a very tough issue, because I have no problem with things like using AI to quickly get a transcript of a show. A few years back when I did my first book, I used it, but it wasn't very good at that point, and it was days, weeks to clean up the transcript book. Now it's minutes. It's pretty good. Maybe it's a couple hours to clean up a show, depending on how deep you want to get into it. But it's so much more accurate and so much faster. And what it's doing is it's giving me content that's the creators have already created that I can then more easily repackage and share with other people. For example, I can post show notes on a blog about a podcast or a live stream. I can put captions up for people who may need that accessibility on a video. The danger comes in when we rely on AI as truth. And this is what you've been talking about in the trust factor. I have noticed in just, you know how Bing, you have that AI search engine, you can ask it questions and it's fascinating, but I also realize how much of the truth being put out there is being put out there by the source that wants you, that has a vested interest in you knowing. You look up, hey, did this company do this? And guess where it pulls from? The company's about page, or the company can say it did. And if it puts it on their LinkedIn page and their Facebook page and puts it on their website, then it's there. So I think we have to be really careful in terms of using it as a source of truth or using it to fact check and things like that. But there's content that we do create that's in the margins that isn't that creative always. And if this speeds the time to market and getting that outline up or getting those show notes posted or an email that's basically intended to tell people what time the meeting is, and you want to throw in, hey, I got a meeting, tell me, how should I write to my colleagues telling them to show up at 3:30 for this semi-annual meeting or something? And ChatGPT gives you a great, nicely written professional thing, all it does is save you time. I think there's advantages and disadvantages to it, and it's all in how you use it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Claudia.
Hey, we've got some audience. I just want to give a shout out to Barb,
hey, Barb.
And Zach, and also Zach. Chris Stone made a comment. He said, nice. Excellent points, Rob. I believe people crave human interaction. We have to weave that in always while using AI.
Yeah, and I think all of us would love to have our own AI agent that is able to boost our productivity so we don't have to be working 8 or 10 hours a day. Our AI can do something for us, but that's the dream that I have. But it's also, is the AI going to really be able to do the things that I want it to do? And that's always the question. And is that a direction that is good for us? I don't know. Rebecca, do you have any thoughts to contribute to this?
Hell yeah, I have thoughts to contribute. I'm a copywriter. Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time over there at 10 o'clock on Mondays at 100 TV at the Trust Factor. And last week you called for an AI constitution, which I thought was the most interesting conversation I've heard around AI so far, which is what is our responsibility in managing and use of it, which does come back, in my opinion, to ground truth. I'm reminded of this adorable little saying that a lie can travel around the world 3 times before the truth puts its pants on. So how do we know what is accurate and what is genuine? And we're finding that all over the world in 2023. What's product placement a prop or is it an ad? Is this copy written by a real person, or is it AI that's generating from millions and millions of other voices? And just like any cook would say, I wouldn't cook with a wine I wouldn't drink with. Dang, it's pulling from an ingredient set that you have no idea if that wine has been sitting out in the sun or carefully curated in a humidor. So I think that there is genuineness, authenticity, what's real, and the truth is what's emerging as brand ideals right now versus the easy peasy. And in favor of the and, the easy peasy is awesome for a copywriter. How many hours do I really want to spend being like, the webinar starts in 1 hour. We'll see you at the webinar. Did you miss the recording? Click here to play. AI can shave all of that time off. So people who are struggling with the lift of blog posts or just like event emails or et cetera can really rely on that to save them time. But ingredients in, ingredients out, and the more and more I work with clients, the more they crave being original, they crave being genuine, and they crave being authentic, because our bullshit meter is refined to a T now. And understanding what's real and what's not is the job of AI. So I stand for the AI constitution, Rob.
My idealized world is if AI...
Well done.
The world is AI can settle the debate, right? But the problem is, can we trust AI to do that fairly and do that accurately? I guess it depends on the biases that are built into the artificial intelligence, right? If it's looking at actual data or actual truth, today, we, as a society and as a culture and as a world, we can't even agree on any truth right now. So it's hard to say whether or not artificial intelligence will be able to solve those arguments, or they're going to create new ones because they're able to just have what's called now. Actually, I don't know if you guys have all heard this, but there is a lot of errors in AI generated content, and they're oftentimes being called hallucinations. So that's a technical term to describe errors in AI right now. It's hallucinations.
Yeah, that's
so
fascinating.
Maybe AI is
taking at night.
Yeah. It's
oh my God. They're eating too much pizza and having these crazy dreams, but that's where all their business like ideas are coming from.
Ian, are these like awake dreams that the AI has or something like that? I don't know. Or is it Claudia, what do you think about it making up its own things? Is it becoming more human?
You know what? Once upon a time in the entertainment industry, record labels owned artists. Okay. We were told you don't touch people, you don't get close to people, you don't let them see the real you. Honestly, that was once upon a time. The record labels would give you your look, your everything. Again, that's a thing of the past. And we have to embrace anew. We have to love people. I always say to artists that are up and coming, if you don't love people, you shouldn't be in this industry. You shouldn't be in business at all, really.
It's a people business, right?
You've got to love people and you've got to let them see who you are. Oftentimes at shows, I'll go out and meet my audience. Whereas some musicians will say, or artists will say, oh no, we don't go mingle with the audience. It's, who the hell are you? Get out there and be real. And so if AI wants to create a double of Claudia Santiago, we have at her, but I'll show you who the real deal is. I'll show you who the real deal is. I'll show up and you'll get to see me. So that's the difference, I think, too, is they can make up whoever they want, our little stunt doubles. We are the real thing. And that's why I say you're fabulous, because there's only one of you.
Yeah. Here's a concern that I have. Remember when Twitter used to be, across all different industries and verticals, just a fabulous place for interacting with people who were loose connections or people you connected with in Twitter chats? And the engagement was off the charts. It was a great tool for business, for social. And then automation came along. Now, automation isn't AI, but once people realized, hey, I could get more tweets out if I just schedule a year in advance or a week in advance or a day in advance, and then eventually everybody automated their Twitter through these scheduling tools or through bouncing a LinkedIn post or an Instagram post automatically to Twitter, so it became a bunch of accounts pushing out content, but nobody talking to anybody. What happens when AI not only writes the newsletter that gets emailed to you, but your AI chatbot or whatever is assigned to respond? Thanks for this newsletter. Like, what happens when they're just talking, they're writing newsletters and talking to each other? And what is the point of our content at that point? Is it helping? Is it a faster way to get summaries of what's going on? Or is AI going to be having a conversation that we're no longer even privy to? And in our own name, even though it's AI doing it back and forth.
Yeah, Ross, I think at that point, we can all be on our boats, all drinking wine while our AIs are doing all of the
So AI could do all of our work then, right. Make us money.
We're on vacation, sorry.
Well, what happens when AI gets so good in investing that everybody buys the same company and one stock goes nuts and every other one gets sold? The crazy things could happen with this that like nobody's thought of, right?
That's what we're all trying to figure out is what could happen. I know I've got a self-driving car. So you can start to see where that's going too. I'll be able to watch YouTube videos in my car when I'm driving around. So,
do you have to be in the car, or can it drive without you in the car?
Oh my god! Go through the drive-through.
If you get the right software package upgrade, it will actually. So when you walk out from a store from a car being parked in a parking lot, you can summon your car and it'll back up and come pick you up. So,
can you send it to or the restaurant and they put the food in the trunk and then
I think eventually that's what a what's right. called a robo-taxi will eventually be able to do something like that, right? Yeah.
Wow, Johnny my mind is kind of blown
Total Recall.
By
yeah.
Owning our stuff, right? Owning our websites, owning our stuff. So that, like I said, there. If I show up somewhere and AI's got five other Claudia Santiago's, they'll know who I am because I'll be doing stuff that only Claudia does. So at the end of the day, who are you and what's unique to you? Because there ain't no robot that's going to copy that.
Though I would love to have a robot in my kitchen that does my dishes for me every night. So that would be nice.
I say the answer is video podcasting because that's the only way you can know someone is real.
Yeah. Right.
Look at that loop. Look at that.
And live. Although
and live video podcast.
Some would say live is the only podcast, way you can but we'll get into that debate later.
Yeah.
I'm trying to use the right words.
Rob, that was an awesome segment and discussion. Rebecca, do you want to hop up and present us with something?
I do. Look, right. I've never presented video in the StreamYards before. As you said, the show is going to be experimental, but I'm hoping this will work. So if y'all... bear with me one moment. I'll get a sharing. I think.
Beauty bubbles.
Yay!
Hey, girl.
Yeah. Also, awesome. Shout out to Zach in the comments, who is the executive producer of Business in the Raw. Okay. I have a 2-minute clip, Ross. Is that too much?
No. Is it optimized for sound? Did I need to do anything or did you need to do anything? And I do not know.
I don't know. And look, so I'm going to try. I'll try.
Okay.
And if it doesn't play sound, then I'll just talk about what it is. Okay.
Okay.
So I'll try right now.
Thank you for the question, first of all. And
does that work?
Yeah.
I'm hearing it. Audience, okay. Let us know if you're hearing it on
anything
YouTube.
That I say from this point, these are just thoughts between friends. This is not by any means advice. I'm not an expert in this realm. I have to recognize when I'm not. I don't have context. I don't have depth. I don't understand what...
Okay, sorry. The context of the question he was asked is, what does he think about a non-traditional career path?
You're going through, okay? So these are just thoughts between friends. Not a financial advisor. Okay, so just to give clarity, because I think it's a little bit irresponsible if I gave you advice and you thought it was right. I'd say the first thing is recognize that we live in a very different world now. So the traditional path is no longer the traditional path. The path less walked is the traditional path. It's becoming the traditional path. So again, I think that's going to be the old way and this will become the traditional path. So first, a mindset shift. Second thing, I learned this from the gentleman who created Siri. His name's Adam Chayer.
We're also heading down to Adam Chayer's office.
I was courting his mentorship in the US. And in America, it's amazing because you reach out to these people and you say, hey, can I sit on the train with you, talk to you while you go to work, wait for you at work all day, sit on the train with you home? Is that cool? Yeah, Vin, come in. Next Friday, good? I was like, what the frick? He taught me this lesson. He said, life is like a book and most people write one chapter and they reread one chapter for the rest of their lives. When the feelings and emotions come up where you feel like you need to change something, that's the indication to write a whole new chapter. And what makes a great book, Vin? What makes a good book and a great book is a book when you turn the chapter, you didn't see that next chapter coming. So I say, as far as I'm concerned, we live once. Write as many different chapters as you can and live an exciting life, not a safe life. Third, final thing I would say is mastery. I think in the world we live in today, people become average at something and expect success. I say, use this as a North Star. And it's a quote from Steve Martin who says,
be so good they can't ignore you.
Be so good they can't ignore you. And I use that as a North Star. I said, the world will not be able to ignore me because I'll work on my craft because that's what I can control. I won't blame the world. I won't blame any of you. I won't blame the market. I'll take full ownership. So be so good they can't ignore you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Awesome.
Okay. Hopefully that worked out. My piece of content then asks the question of, is a non-traditional path the new traditional path? Do we have to reinvent ourselves in a new chapter? And does that chapter need to be completely surprising? So as we've got a bunch of folks here who have been at this for a while, do you feel like your path being the non-traditional path should be the new normal? And this actually is an interesting tie-in to Rob's topic of, can we invent something that's so surprising? I don't know that AI can be so surprising. It depends on the sophistication of your prompts. But is reinvention the new thing? And if so, how are you in reinventing yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we're all faced with that challenge through our lives, is continual reinvention. But I think some may not like that because it tends to be an uncomfortable place to be. It's something I've strived for in my work career, is to do different things and try new things. And some things work and some things don't. But the commonality across all of it is that you learn something new and you have a different experience and your life goes on a different path than if you had stayed on the old path. And that's what life is really all about, is experiencing new and different things. I don't know that everybody agrees with that approach, but that's my thoughts on it. And that's a little bit why I'm doing Trust Factor. This is definitely a different pathway for me and what I'm doing with my career. I spent the last 9 years working at podcast hosting companies, and that had a clear path to it. But this path I'm on right now is certainly not as clear, but I definitely understand it.
How do you think that you go from reconciling these two ideas that were brought forth in this video clip? I brought up how to pronounce this guy's name, and now I forget. Now I'm scared because I just discovered this really powerful speaker. How do you reconcile, rip up your resume and start again, create a whole new chapter that's a complete surprise, and be so good they can't ignore you? Because if you rip up your resume and start again, or you start a new surprising chapter no one expected, how can you be so good that you can't be ignored when you're just trying something new? So that's the reconciliation I'm bringing to the table.
We have to start by telling the truth. And the truth is that the social compact that existed in the 50s, 60s, 70s, probably all the way till the early 90s, was that you could go to work for a company, and if you don't cause trouble, you show up, you follow the rules, you do half decent work, you could stay there for 40 years and retire with a pension, and you would pretty much always have work. If it turned out you weren't good at what you do, they would find another department to shift you to, or somebody would trade you for an employee in another area or whatever. But basically, if you didn't break the rules or embarrass the people at the top of the company, you could pretty much guarantee yourself, I'm going to have a job, I'm going to retire with a pension. And that job will probably not only support yourself, it might support a spouse, it might support your children, you might even be able to own a house from it. I'm talking about white collar jobs, blue collar jobs, entrepreneurial jobs, owning stores, whatever it is you went into doing, there was a chance that you had longevity in that. And so maybe you sacrificed some of what was interesting about changing careers and moving around for a guaranteed future. There is no guaranteed future anymore. That social compact has been dead for almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
And yet, universities, too often parents, too often companies, still maintain the fiction that you're coming to a job and you're going to, your future is going to be climbing that ladder. And things are changing so fast that with AI coming and everything else, if you can't be exceptional and you can't be reinventing yourself and adapting to new things, It's very hard to sustain a career, and I'm concerned for people because not everybody's entrepreneurial. Not everybody wants to be an artist or be a creator. This is a unique, these are unique skills being an entrepreneur. Like, these are, to some extent, they can be learned, and to some extent, they come from deep places in your personality. And
grit.
I don't know that we have enough jobs for people who are, who for years have succeeded in life by being things like consistent, able to repeat performance, master some task that has been around forever, and all of a sudden we take all those jobs away because of AI and automation and downsizing and right-sizing. You really do have to find something that you're really good at it, and you got to work at it, and then you got to be open to adapting. This is a very tough economy for a lot of people, and I think creators are sold dreams too. Creator, tell your message to the world, and all of a sudden, hey, you're going to have millions of fans and tons of money and all that. And like every other field, there's a 1% that's raking it in, and everybody else is trying their best to maintain. We're in a tough, very tough market overall.
Yeah, I think back in the early days when I was covering the growth of the internet and what was happening with it, the dream was, and there was a couple of video presentations that I played the audio from in my radio program that we're talking about life in the future when everyone has a voice, right? So you think about that was seen back then as not entirely a utopian concept, but as we think about what's happening in the world today, is that increasingly millions and hundreds of millions of people do have a voice that they can voice out to the world. But what's happening because of that is that technology companies are seeing that as an opportunity to limit your reach of your voice. And if you want to have wide reach of your voice, guess what? You have to pay for that. So we've now basically created an economy based on reach and attention. And I think I'm still playing in the world of organic discovery, right? And I've always done that natural discovery, not paying for my ability to reach listeners. But I know increasingly in the content creation community, creators are feeling more obligated to pursue those type of directions, whether it be advertising on other podcasts to promote their podcast or to buy distribution, boost their posts, pay $10 to reach another 1,000 people kind of thing. So that's an element of the expansion of this online medium, this online communication medium that had the promise of all of us being able to reach all of humanity with our voice. But the other end of the spectrum, is everyone listening or is everyone increasingly just speaking, right? And that was always the tension in the podcasting space, is it's this balance between the amount of creators and the amount of listeners. And what kind of content is being created that is reaching the needs of the listeners? And this gets back to that concept that I was talking about everyone, because of the internet and technology and these mobile devices, that we have a global voice, but do we have global reach is the question. And I also wonder what the impact of AI technology is around discovery of other voices too, because when you think about it, you do a query in ChatGPT, it's giving you the results based on its algorithm. It's not giving you the results based on an individual's thoughts or processes that allows you to pick and choose opinions that are coming from different people that you can choose. It's actually deciding for you what the information that you're being fed. And that can be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, Google can change public opinion just by twisting its algorithm. It's a small amount of people in a very divided country that they have to play with in order to change public opinion on important issues and different things. And there's a guy that, it's very interesting because he did a study, and he's like the only one who did a study of this. And it's shocking. The algorithm, if you think it's random or it's based on what people click on or whatever on a lot of platforms, particularly he focuses on Google, it's not. They put their thumb on the scale for what they want people to see, what's in their interest as a global corporation, what's in their interest in terms of markets they want to get into or don't want, things they don't want to deal with, where their rights are and what's good for them. It's a very complicated thing, but these tools which have taken away the gatekeepers, right? The information I want, it seems like it's all at my fingertips. I don't have to go to a library. I don't have to go through microfiche and look for a newspaper article from 1974. I don't have to go to a radio or TV station to do a show. I can do one right here. But the government and those corporations who are at the top can also use this technology to limit our free speech and our ability to, like Rob was saying, actually reach anybody with all this content. And one of the ways they've done it, I think, is by spreading us all out. So we all have our own channel and we all have our own. And I'm not saying you shouldn't own your content and all that stuff. But one of the things about 100 TV is at least we've got a group of people who are working together towards one goal. And we're not separated in terms of how we're approaching getting our voice out there. But we're still, right now, if we're going to YouTube, we're at the whim of Google. If Google doesn't like something that we say, they can shut us down. But also AI, this is the power of AI. It's probably AI will find something in a word we used. It may not understand the context. It doesn't maybe read always sarcasm or humor. And it may think that we're advocating something we're not advocating. It's a dangerous, we're in a very strange place in which the people are given an illusion of this great voice and power. And yet in some ways they're more controlled and have less power and less of a voice than they've ever had, because the reach of technology and government and such is beyond what it's ever been before. There's no living in a little village and only the people in that village hear when you complain about something. The whole world now knows what you're thinking, what you're texting, what you're sending to somebody. Nothing's private anymore. So it's a very strange world that we live in. If, like me, you actually live pre-internet.
There's no such thing as ground truth anymore. And I think that there's never been a more important time to hone critical thinking skills.
Totally.
Because the curtain is off. We all see the great, all and powerful Oz behind the curtain now. Excellent points, RB. Claudia,
Can I just throw something out there, that just two things. As our voices are being constricted, so to speak, partner up with entertainers. Entertainers seem to get a really back road in, if you would, where the like social media that actually tolerates us probably more than a lot of people. Entertainers have always been able to get a different angle, and they'll go, oh, okay. That's what I love being a part of 100 TV is I learned so much from you, but I can bring something to the table that's a little different, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I say to people is, you know what? We're not in doom and gloom, you guys. We're in the greatest times of our lives. There's been crap going on throughout all history to silence people's voices. So we just need to learn to navigate what we got. And to get back to your question, Rebecca, one of the things I learned years ago, which I find such a valuable tool, and this is part of our truth, is who are we? How are we wired? I've done these DISC assessment things and stuff like that, where I really learned what my strengths are, but also those that I work with. And even when I hire producers or musicians, I don't hire certain personality types to do a certain type of work, even though they might want to do it. They're not suited for it. Not everybody's suited to entrepreneurship. Some people are just not. I have people in my life who love what I do, and some of them have even put out dollars, that have put out all kinds of stuff to do it, and they crash and burn after 6 months or a year. And really, as coaches, as people building up other people, why encourage people who are not wired a certain way to step into places? I knew was an entrepreneur way long ago, this chick who was always trying to get jobs as a receptionist. Entrepreneurs are not freaking receptionists. They're leaders. They're visionaries. They have no time to answer to people. Do you see what I'm saying? So our truth has to be, we got to know who we are. And we are fabulous. I'll bring this out again, because I'm not wired like Rebecca. She's not wired like me. Rob's not wired like me. Ross isn't wired like me. We may have some crossovers, but look at the beautiful thing that comes together. So that's where I say, yeah, with the career thing, with all this, if we're coaching you guys, just because somebody wants to do something, find out who they are first and then help them get there and stay in their lane. Because you know what, too, with the internet, and Ross, I wrote this in one of your books, when all this was really exploding, I went, hold on a minute, people here. There's going to be a hell of a lot of jobs here taking care of people that are becoming internet addicts. Okay, addiction comes in every which way. Okay, there's a lot of jobs out there right now and doctors specializing in internet addiction. So at the end of the day is, what is our truth? Who are we? Are fabulous, but we got to figure that thing out.
Yeah.
We can't just keep doing the next project. We got to figure that out. And then there's times and seasons. Like us women, we know, right, Rebecca? There's a different season in our journey, right? Those hot flashes come pretty random and quick.
Like whenever Ross is on screen, my hot flashes get worse.
There we go. You know what? There's times and seasons. There's times and seasons. And you know what? If we're not in a season anymore to be running a race, then hire somebody else to partner with you. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we're trying to be authentic, but we're really full of bullshit. Sorry. But because we're still trying to be someone else or do something else. So there, I said it.
No, you're right.
Say it's hot in here.
Right?
You're absolutely right. Do we have time to do one more, or should we? Does anybody have to jump?
Oh my God, Ross, you didn't even get your chance. You didn't get your chance, man.
Do you have 10 more minutes, or do you
need to? Yeah, let's do it, Ross.
All right.
Ross, go.
All right, I'll slide back up to the top row, and I will say that there is an epic battle going on, or at least it seems that way, in the world of podcasting between some of the old school early adopters who are very strict on the definition of podcasting. To them, it is media delivered through an RSS feed from an independent host delivered through an RSS feed out to the world. It's not put on one platform such as uploading a video or going live on YouTube. So in their view, a show on YouTube, like what we're doing now, even though the audio of this will eventually be distributed as a podcast, what we're doing now isn't a podcast. We're doing a live stream, or we're doing a video talk show, or we're doing a YouTube video, or what have you. But they would object to using the term podcasting, which is what YouTube is now using for these type of shows, as YouTube has given us podcasting playlists. So every playlist for every one of our shows, because all of our shows are essentially, whether they're 5 minutes or they're 50 minutes or 2 hours, they're essentially video podcasts. And that most every show, Claudia's is the most difficult, but even she's going to adapt it, can become an audio podcast and be distributed that way. So I'm going to throw out what I think, and then we'll go around the room. I know Rob has had a shot at this as well, and he is really one of the true pioneers of podcasting, and he has a different view, more nuanced view than some of the other early adopters. And I think that the people who are fighting this are missing out not only on an opportunity for a new business, but they're missing out on an opportunity to really become leaders and to become even bigger than they are. They're people who love podcasters, who are dedicated to the community and support the community, but they're missing the boat on this. YouTube adopting podcasting and bringing video into podcasting is huge. It's a huge opportunity for people. The public thinks of a podcast as a video talk show. There are celebrities and major media figures and journalists who do video shows on YouTube, and they call it a podcast. And they have millions of subscribers on YouTube. They deliver it as an audio podcast, but when most people think of their show, they think of it as a YouTube show, first and foremost. And I think for podcasters to fight that, rather than to educate other people on the benefits of also distributing through an RSS feed your audio, or on teaching some of the techniques that people who've been doing podcasting for years understand about how to tell a story, how to tease what's coming up, how to develop a rapport. Podcasters know how to do things very well in doing audio only. They should be bringing that. There's a whole world of potential clients, potential customers, people they can influence who will look at them as leaders. And I think they're instead fighting because those people are calling their YouTube show a podcast, which is a sort of a semantic battle. And it's going to lead to maybe a Pyrrhic victory, but not one that in the long run is going to either be good for podcasting, podcasters, listeners, or where the industry has to go in order to grow and go to the next level. Not sure what anybody wants to say to that, where you stand on YouTube adding podcasts, but they're not truly podcasts through an RSS feed. Right now, you're just uploading a video with some audio in it, or video with video and audio. What do you think?
Who wants to go first?
Rob has some opinions.
I have an opinion on this that'll probably take an hour to fully cover, but it really, I think it's helpful to go back and look at the history of podcasting and to understand that when podcasting started, and I'm talking about like 2005 to 2007 and even beyond, probably up to 2010, video podcasting, the true definition of video podcasting by even the purists, it's basically a video file that's treated just like the audio files are today. It's included as a link in your RSS feed and creates a download to your player or your computer or your mobile device, and then you just play back the video, just like you do with the audio, where actually it's even more than that now. You click the button and it plays like it's a stream, but it's really a download. And so that's the real tension. And when this shift towards YouTube started, and this was back in the 2000, probably 2008, 2009 timeframe, people started shifting their video podcasts over to YouTube because it was free hosting. There was no charge. Video podcasters typically had to pay extra, or quite a bit actually, to get their video files hosted and delivered via RSS. And that kind of continues today. It's, I think, the cheapest place you can get a video podcast right now, I think, is Podbean at $79 a month, and which is reasonable to some degree for what you're doing, but it's not necessarily accessible to large numbers of people. So that's why we've seen this shift over to YouTube as a alternative video podcast distribution platform. And it's been that way for a long time. It's just, it's taken this long for YouTube to catch up to what's been going on and to label it as such. And that's been my pushback. I was a purist for most of my podcasting career too, but really that's because I work for podcast hosting companies and some of them supported video and some of them didn't. So that's why we're seeing this tension today. And the reason I've changed my tune a little bit on this is because what I'm seeing with audiences and what they are perceiving is going on. And this tension has been around for a long time. This is not a new debate. And anybody that's been around podcasting for a long time that really understands the complexity of this will recognize this discussion and realize that YouTube has been a tension in podcasting for a long time. But what's happening now is it's coming to a head because there's a younger generation coming in, and embracing podcasting, and they're coming out of the TikTok generation. They're coming out of Reels and short form video, and they're starting to see if they create a podcast and it's a video show, then they want to call it a podcast because that's different. It's not a TV show. Sure, they can call it a video show, but that's boring. There's a lot of people that recognize the term podcast, and it's a converged, it can be used this way as a converged name for it, right? Where a podcast can represent a video as well as an audio experience. And that's what the tension in the podcasting space is really all about, is moving away from this purist ideology and being fearful that these proprietary video platforms are going to somehow kill podcasting because they're going to take it over somehow, is really where this is coming from. I believe in the big picture, it's really unfounded fear, but that's where it's coming from.
What's funny is I get a lot of people, because I'm an advocate of growing the market and being, I don't know if the word would be inclusive here or whatever, but I'm a big advocate. Podcasters should use video, even if it's just turning on their camera and recording video while they're recording their podcast, because it's a scroll stopper on social and you can take your best clips from your podcast and play that out. But also in doing video versions, doing it, recording your podcast live. And so on that angle, I'm on the one side. On the other part, I've always been, in my own talk, in how I think of things, I've always done live stream deals. One of my shows, it's a live stream show and a podcast. And I've always joined us for the live stream, you know, at this time and whatever. But basically, if I called it a podcast, that's fine too. And that's what other people call the live aspect of it. You know what? I think it's like language. The dictionary isn't the same as it was 50 years ago, or even 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. If major media figures are coming to YouTube and doing a show when they decide to exit their contract or get fired or need a new thing to start to do, and they have a million subscribers and they're calling it a podcast, whether or not it's live, whether or not it's ever distributed on an RSS feed, am I supposed to begrudge somebody who's never podcasted before and the first they learned about it was because they saw a tab on their YouTube thing and they're like, I want to start a podcast? And their thing is, hey, I've got a camera. They think of a podcast now as what Joe Rogan does, or famous podcasters like that. And most people learned about Joe Rogan through his clips on YouTube, and then they subscribed to the audio podcast. And I don't know, there's a lot of different things we could touch upon here. Rebecca or Claudia, what do you think of this whole debate between podcasting and video, and are they part of the same world? Are they different entities? How should the podcasting industry view what YouTube is doing?
Do you want to go, Rebecca?
I have one comment, which is my boyfriend's a podcast producer, and he would never, ever consider video podcasting. He is a purist. That's all I know is his about what is a podcast and who's interloping on the podcast space. Other than that, I don't feel qualified to talk on it because I'm a noob myself. I think that he probably is, by having that like real strong line in the sand. This is very black and white thinking about what is a podcast is an exclusive ideology. So I've really got to make more pie attitude, but I understand where the purists are coming from because I've heard that rant a few times.
I would imagine.
It's really all I can contribute.
I guess a purist would also say, if I watch the replay of this on my TV, I'm not really watching TV. I'm watching YouTube. I'm watching an internet. Like, if you want to get technical, broadcasting isn't anything but what's over the air on radio or television, and then cable's its own thing, and there's satellite. I mean, you could get very technical about all these things, and we use terms like television and broadcasting and radio and stuff interchangeably with internet and stuff that's delivered via the web versus delivered via satellite. And there's a lot of techno. Anyway, Claudia.
I think to your point, sorry, Claudia, I'm just one. Okay. To your point, Ross, earlier, though, about who has their finger on the scale Ground Truth, Google, you know, who's at the top of the food chain of all of these media outlets? Like, is Google there is. Really an independent? Yeah. Yeah. Is there really an
Google
independent
wants you to call
channel?
It a pod? Exactly. Yes, you're going to call like, it a podcast.
If BlackRock wants you to call it a podcast, exactly. By God, there's going to be a lot of place. That's really it. Claudia, after you, Maya.
All right, so taking you back in history a little bit, okay, we had the phonograph, you know, you had to crank that thing, right? I actually have one that I use on stage for my vintage jazz show. So you had to crank that puppy, or somebody had to, okay? Then we had just the records that played on this electric record player, okay? Then we had CDs, right? Who remembers those things?
What about 8-tracks?
Oh, the 8-tracks.
Can't yeah. forget 8-track, right?
The VHS 8-tracks.
Okay. Cassette tapes?
Okay, then we had the USB BMX, sticks. Now right. we got the digital. Now we've got the Spotify's, BMX. The Apple, the da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, this is what happened in the industry, okay, Sound, the Record Man, stores that were brick and mortar that never wanted to move online. What happened to them? Closed doors. Okay. The ones that did move online, hey, they're making sales. The ones who figured out how to embrace that community, how to market to that community, how to include that in their brand, that, hey, you know what, we're also inclusive of online sales. They're in business. And just saying that in the entertainment world, as an entertainer, I've got to deliver what the generation today is tapping into. Where are they? Okay. Not every platform is going to be my platform, but the ones where my audience is, that's where I go. So all I'm saying with that part of it is remembering that dream that I said to you where I was sleeping and some people just want to keep sleeping. I got my bleeping gear and I put on those new shoes and I threw on a skirt, which is like not really my comfort zone. Sometimes we got to get out of that comfort zone. And just my thing, I know, Rebecca, you've got the boyfriend who's a purist and he's probably going to hate what I'm saying, but this is business. And at the end of the day is where are people and what do they want to hear? And do they really frigging care if we call it a podcast or not? I'll tell you, some of my generation doesn't care. Us artists have been producing audio media for a long time. It was never called a podcast. Okay. But we've gotten distribution. We've gotten impact. We've gotten following. It's been successful. So that's one thing. Then the other thing is the whole other thing. And this is where I know the purists come in. When I was being developed in Nashville, I worked with some, and I still do work with some amazing live stage producers. They said to me, Claudia, when you get on a live stream, you're not going to do what you do on stage. It's a different audience. It's a different medium in which you're delivering. When you go to a movie, people are expecting a movie. When you go to a theater, they're expecting that experience. So Viva La Stage, yeah, it's my show, but it's not just about my stage. I always say to people, what is your stage? And deliver from that stage. Now, with my show, Viva La Stage, when we started thinking about going podcast with it, I'm going, holy crap, mine's really visual. There's audio in there, but how's that going to translate to podcast? I'm trying to figure out how that will translate. And we might change it up a little bit. We might clip some things out that don't suit a podcast. Because it's a different stage. It's a different medium of delivery. So once again, going back to who we are, I'm an entertainer, but I'm also a people lover, and I'm going to communicate and touch your heart, whether it's on my live festival stage, whether it's in a jazz club, whether it's on a rock stage, or whether it's on a podcast. I need to figure out how I'm going to deliver authentically Claudia Santiago to that. So that's where I'm coming from a little bit with this whole podcast thing. At the end of the day, we can call it anything we want. You know what? In the music industry, when somebody listens to a record, that's what we call it, a record. It's not a record anymore. There ain't no records no more, except for the ones that are being done up now, the new ones. But we use that term saying, hey, it's something quality that was produced.
I think one of the things that you've done so well over the years is really adapting to live streaming by realizing that the engagement with the audience is different than if you were in a stadium or an arena or a nightclub or other type of environment. One of the cool things that happened during the pandemic, which was a horrible time in general, but those artists who followed the lead of people like yourself tended to do really well. And those who thought of their live stream as just a performance and didn't talk about, hey, so this is what the song's about, or good to see you to this person or that person in the chat, often nobody cared because they could just put on the record, so to speak, or the tape or the cassette or the A-track or what have you. But those that gave people a feeling of being connected during a time when we were all stuck in our homes, they're the ones who had the best experience professionally and personally from live streaming.
Exactly. And I had the blessing that before the COVID hit us, is I'm an international audience. And I don't just mean that I put music out there and people globally follow, which they do, is I set foot on the ground touring in different countries. But you know what? I didn't just show up. I said, follow me. Here's where I am. Follow me. When all that hit, I was live streaming and connecting with all those people personally. And then not only that, but businesses that were running online conferences, I was getting messages saying, hey, Claudia, can you host our conference? Can you do a halftime show? Why? Because I set up my studio light true to stage. And so I can deliver entertainment. So this is where, even though I wasn't live, I was live on a different way. Again, at the end of the day, we are connecting with people. And those are the ones that actually put their credit card in to buy something. They're the ones that show up at a live stream. They show up on a podcast. They pick up your book, Ross.
Exactly.
Without the people, we don't have much.
Yeah. I have so enjoyed spending the last 90 minutes with you guys. And I would love to hear from people in the chat what you like about the show, what you would like us to do differently. We came together, like I said, for the first time without any sort of rehearsal or anything. We're just going with this and it'll evolve. And we'd love to know what you think, what you'd like from us, what kind of topics you'd like to hear from. And we thank you for being here. Thank you, Claudia. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Rob and Ross. And this has been the Stream Leader Report. We will see you again next week, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Take care, everybody.
We're so glad you're joining us on 100 TV. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe and hit that notification bell.